Helen Newton at this time.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. So in terms of introducing your plan, I will do a brief sort of introduction, and then I'll ask David just to talk a little bit more detail about each of the risks that we've identified in the report. So if I could draw members' attention to page 5, this really sets out an overview of the strategy. I think the important point to note for 2018-19 is that this is the first year that we've produced an audit plan following the PSMA exercise to appoint auditors. So we're working under a new contract with PSMA. However, the scope of the work remains the same as set out in the Local Audit and Accountability Act and the Code of Audit Practice. So the work is broadly the same, but you will notice a reduction in the fee that's set out within the report, which came from that contracting exercise. So in terms of the risks that we have identified for financial statements, they're summarised on page 5, and then they are set out in a little bit more detail further on in the report. What I would say is that aside from one refocused risk and one new risk that's sort of coming for this year, these we're carrying out, broadly speaking, the same work for the RFI this year as we did last year. You will see there are two fraud risks, which David will take you through in a moment, a number of other risks which are inherent risks, so these are errors in statements that are subject to more judgment or estimation, so we carry out more work in those areas, the valuation of land and buildings and investment property, PFI accounting, pension liability valuation, and then overpaid business rates, appeals provisions will be the same. The risk that is new for 2018-19 is the risk around the new accounting standards. So the implementation of IFRS 9 for financial instruments and IFRS 15, which is revenue from contracts with customers, they've become coming to practice from the 1st of April 2018, and so we need to consider their impact on the council. In addition to the RFI, we have identified a value for money risk, which is set out on page 17, and again, David will talk you through that as well. So I'll hand over to David just to take you through each of those and a little bit more detail.
So if you return to page C10, that is where these more detailed setting out the risks starts that were summarized in C5. The first risk there is the risk in effect of management override of controls. Most members, I think, will be familiar with this risk from previous years' audit plans. This is a risk which is identified on all of this under auditing standards. And in effect, what it is saying is, no matter how good your system of internal control, there is a theoretical possibility that management could override that system. And therefore, we need to undertake a program of work to understand whether that risk has actually occurred. It is not to say that this is a risk which is specific or particular to one of my clients. It is to say this is something we're required to identify and address on all audits. Open page on C11 is the second fraud risk identified. And again, we are required.
Sorry, David, can you speak up a little bit? Please?
Sorry, yes.
Very bad acoustics in this hall.
Open the page on C11 is the second fraud risk identified. Again, on all audits, we are required to consider the possibility of risk of fraud in revenue recognition or income recognition for local authorities. That definition is broadened out to also consider the possibility of fraud in the recognition of expenditure. And so we have considered here where there is a possibility that fraud could be perpetrated in the recognising of income or expenditure in the council's accounts. And the area that we have sort of pinpointed as a possible area of risk is around inappropriate capitalization of expenditure, we should say, in the income statement. So what that would mean is expenditure which has occurred in the year, which should be recognized as expenditure in your income and expenditure statement, and therefore would need to go to the consideration of impact on the general fund and council tax, would be incorrectly capitalized, and so effectively added to assets on the balance sheet. And what that does then is it takes it out of your income statement and splits that cost over a longer period of time, because it's effectively then recognized as depreciation over the life of the asset rather than being recognized in full in the year. and it has no effect on your council tax consideration because that sort of cost is reversed out of the accounts. So that's the, with, again, that's not to say that we are aware that that is happening here. That is just to say that that is a possible area of risk, but, and we will undertake some work around that to understand what that is. Going over onto C12, then these are the areas, as Helen mentioned, of higher inherent risk, but which are not considered to be specifically significant risks, as the two fraud risks are. And these are, as again as Helen has said, mainly areas of significant estimation within the council's accounts. So the valuation of land and buildings, PFI accounting, which are the two on C12, pension liability valuation, and the business rates appeals provision, which are on C13, are all areas which involve a significant degree of estimation in arriving at the balances and amounts and disclosures in your financial statements. We will undertake work there to understand the work of the specialists and experts that the council uses to arrive at some of those figures in the accounts. We will use our own specialists to help us with that where necessary and appropriate. And we will challenge the assumptions and the underlying information used to arrive at those estimates in the accounts. The final area of focus for the financial statements audit is on C14, and it's, again, as Helen has mentioned, the introduction of two new accounting standards for 2018-19, introduced by the Code of Audit Practice, the Code of Accounting Practice, which all local authorities will have to be following for this year. IFRS 9 covering financial instruments, and IFRS 15 covering revenue and contracts with customers. The council will need to undertake an exercise to understand how those new standards will affect the financial statements, and we will review that. We wouldn't expect either of these to have a particularly significant effect on the council's accounts. IFRS 9, I think, would have more of an effect, but it's mainly around asset provisions and disclosures. IFRS 15, because the nature of the council's income is broadly grants, council tax, business rates, we wouldn't expect that to have a particularly significant effect, but we would need to confirm that via the council's own assessment based on financial statements. And then lastly, the last thing that we wanted to really talk through in detail is on C17, which is the risk of our value for money responsibilities. So alongside giving an opinion on the council's financial statements, we need to draw a conclusion about the council's value for money and the arrangements that it has in place to deliver value for money to local taxpayers. As most members will be aware, over the last couple of years, we have looked at the measures that the council has put in place to address its medium and long-term financial position. And that was as a result of a new medium-term financial strategy introduced in 2016. And broadly, the work we will undertake this year will be to continue to follow up on that to understand the progress made against that medium-term financial strategy and the work that's being undertaken to improve the council's financial position both the medium and long term.
Thank you, David. So are there any questions on the audit plan, paper C, please? Chris, and I'll come to you, Reg.
Two questions. One, in terms of the potential for fraud, there is a potential for people to sort of underestimate, an area that I think should be looked at is the disposal of assets that are not property assets. For instance, when we replace large numbers of computers, what is happening to the old ones and where are they going? They might just disappear, or if we remove some of the beach safety equipment that's just been bought at quite a high price, do we actually get anything back for it? I think there are areas there that, in terms of value for money, maybe should be included in the scope of
I think it's a very good point, Councillor. I think there's a difference in terms of what we do with your external auditors and potential work that will be done through the internal audit plan, so Paul may wish to comment as well. In terms of the disposal of assets, we will look at disposal of of assets where it's material to the financial statements to ensure that there is a proper procedure for that, and that they have been correctly removed from the asset register, and the accounting should be correct for that. In terms of computers and each safety equipment, individually they're not going to be material, and even cumulatively they may not be material in any one year. But there are some very important points around both of those in terms of ensuring that they are both correctly disposed of, both in terms of getting the right value for it, but also ensuring that the way in which they are disposed of, particularly for computers, for example, with data security being so high on the agenda, the proper process is followed. Probably more of an internal bit point of view than ours, if I am honest, but it's something that we should always be mindful of. And whether it's an audit, do you work in that sphere and then have regard to their findings? I don't know if all the other types of things have.
Just to confirm that separately, yes, it would be something that we would essentially pick up in an internal audit. It's not something we have in the audit plan proposed that we'll see later on the agenda of the committee, but it's something that obviously if you do have significant concerns, feel free to sit down with us and we can talk through those concerns and potentially add an audit in at any given time. The audit plan can be fluid if we get concerns that are raised to us about certain areas. But currently it's not in the audit plan for next year. I haven't heard of any issues previously. But it is something that would be under internal with reading. It's not currently in plan at the moment in relation to the IT assets. Regarding IT assets, I last looked about, I think about 2 years ago. What I will say is the ARPA Council is very, very good at sweating its assets. So for the time an IT device is disposed of, very, very, very little residual value left in it. Regarding fixed assets, again, I think it's probably 2 or 3 years since that has been looked at specifically, but I don't think whether we're identifying any significant issues regarding how they're managing the space.
The second question was on the C13 pension liability valuation. It says the Council Pension Fund deficit, is that a potential deficit, or do we know that there's a deficit? Because if we do, then maybe we should be reviewing that at some stage in the future at this meeting.
That's a good question. David, would you like to answer it?
It's a notional deficit, I suppose you would say. So what the actuary is doing is trying to estimate what the value of pension liabilities would be at a given point in time, should that liabilities crystallise at that point in time. It is not to say that the council is actually going to have to pay out that as some sort of lump sum. There are measures in place whereby the actuary sets contribution rates every 3 years with a view to returning the pension fund to a fully funded position then for a sort of medium term, a 15 to 20 year horizon. And that is the purpose of the training evaluation that they undertake every 3 years. And then in between times, the purposes of the council's financial statements, they estimate what that liability is at that moment. But it is normal, I suppose you could say, for a local authority to have the pension fund deficit on its balance sheet. I think there may be a small number, and Joe might be able to correct me, there may be a small number of local authority pension funds which are in surplus, but the majority are in deficit to some degree, and that deficit is then split out across the balance sheet of all of the authorities which have a stake in that pension fund. My understanding is that the deficits of the worst broadly reduced, I think, at the last round of trade evaluations because the value of assets that are there to meet that liability had increased in that period.
Perhaps I can chip in as well, wearing my other hat as chairman of the Pension Fund Committee. As David said, there are two different measures. One is, if you like, if the council continues, and the other is if the council, for some reason, ceases to exist. Maybe they abolish county councils and just have district councils like that. So as far as a continuing position is concerned, nearly all what you're aiming for is that you will have enough money to pay everybody off in 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and that's a long time scale. And then you can measure in percentage of what, how much is covered. In the private sector, the percentages covered are quite small. You've seen the horror stories about these big stores that go bankrupt and they've got 50% or 40% or something of their pensions covered. In local authorities, it's usually better than that, but we are among the better ones. Currently, we cover over 90% of our liabilities, which is quite high in commercial terms, and we're satisfied that that's sufficient. Thanks to Reg and his colleagues' work over the years. I'm not taking any credit for that. All right, I'll take some credit for it. So that's as far if you're continuing. But the one we're talking about is if the council closes down, or in the same situation, if one of the, you know, it's not just the council scheme, there are other employers who are in the scheme. If they close down, if Island Roads close down, for example, then there is a liability for their people to be paid in 30, 40, 50 years' time, and there's not enough money to cover that, so there's a lump sum payable, and that's the same in the council. If the council was abolished, then there would be a large sum payable to cover all the amounts which would have been paid in by the employers and the employees over the period of time, but we're not planning on abolishing the county council. So as far as the main risk is concerned, we're very happy with the situation of the Isle of Wight Pension Fund as it is on an ongoing basis. So, are you happy with that? Sorry, Reg, took a long time to come to you.
Right. It's stretched to two or three, so. C5, talking about PFI, I suppose you mean Island Roads because that's the only one you've got. But why it's not clear it's Island Roads. Anyway, who actually audits Island Roads? Who audits whether the contract is on time, whether the quality of the work is of a standard that's supposed to fulfil the contract, and what's the other one? Bear in mind, I'll work there. We've spent a day so far, and we've spent about £37 million of taxpayers' money on it. And I've got great concerns that it's not going to happen on time. They haven't started in my ward yet. And they've only got less than 18 months to go to bring everything up, from fence to fence, to bring it up to an adoptable standard. Who's actually auditing this process? And where, oh, I know what the other question is, sorry. Where can I go and see where all this money has gone, who's paid it, how much of that £7.7 million a year is actually spent on the roads, and how much of it is spent on the shareholders of the parent company. I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Reg. Who would like to respond to that?
I'll start. So in terms of what you were saying, Councillor, in terms of who is monitoring the delivery of the contract, that should be done through the council's own contract monitoring processes. And I know that there have been a number of reports back to this committee, and I'm sure to council around that process. So our responsibility and what we've included in the plan is the scheme correctly accounted for within the financial statements? Now that's not the same as does it provide good value for money for the council. That is something that the council should be considering and should be reviewing through the contract monitoring. In terms of the visibility of the money, I would say that would be the same thing in terms of being able to audit. Then, you know, I am sure that the contractor who is running Island Roads, they will be required to produce their own accounts, which will be subject to audit. So that would be the route to do it. In terms of value for money for the council, as you will have seen in the value for money conclusion on page C17, when David introduced the report, he was saying that, you know, largely our work is to follow up the work we've done over the last 2 years to consider the improvements that the council has been putting in place to improve the robustness of the medium term and longer term financial strategy. But if you look at the penultimate paragraph, we have noted that there are potential additional challenges over this coming year and into the future, which include, and we have included in there, the high risk PFI, because we know that there are issues that the council is looking to address, and we want to understand that in a little more detail. So I'm not promising you in any way. way, so that we can sort of come back and say he does or does not provide the bank money, but we are at least considering it within our consideration of proper arrangements that the council has in place. So is the council monitoring the contract, both in terms of the spend and what it is getting for the spend, and how does that then link into the future financial plans for the council? So it's quite difficult to answer your question specifically, because I think actually what you're looking for is something probably more of an exposition about how the council monitors that contract. I don't know if one of the officers may be able to pick that up.
Yeah, I don't need to hit my number of times. I can just a very brief summary.
Yes, can you put your thing on?
As I understand it, with PFI, I haven't looked at it for probably about 3 years, but the council paid a unitary charge over to the PFI provider. There is an uplift to the unitary charge each year. If the PFI provider have increased the quality of the island road network to the agreed level, that's signed off by an independent certifier. So island roads say, this is what we've done. The independent certifier comes along and says, yes, we agree with you, and then the unitary charges are lifted. Regarding the day-to-day performance, there is a vast set of very specific performance indicators which the PFI provider has to comply with, and there's a contract management function which the council has with regular meetings to check those performance indicators are being applied and it's tenant payment solution and so on. I think what the councillor is asking is if, because in the PFI contract, it's a core investment period, and I think at the end of the core investment period, the island highways network has got to have been, coming back to the comment from the councillor about the fence to fence, I think all of the highways network has got to be improved at a certain level by the end of the core investment period, and you then have a maintenance period remaining. Where it's kept at that kind of level. So I think what the council is asking is the PFI provider on track to complete its work by the end of the core investment period? Is that correct?
It's not only the quality and the time scale, because we all know, all those who were on the council at that time, I think Paul was the only one who was there. We went through weeks and weeks of all these presentations at what it was going to be so wonderful, and how would anybody refuse it? Fence to fence, every pavement, every curbstone was all going to be renewed and brought up to a standard. They were going to do that in 7 years. Now, they started the contract in 2013. 13 from 19-6, they've only got a year to do it. How the hell are they going to finish it all? They're not. Why isn't somebody monitoring, all right, looking whether it's done or not, but they're also taking money off the council, so that money, in my view, should be audited so that we know that it's getting spent. Because if they're not doing the job they priced for, there's money left over, isn't there? To my way of thinking, I mean, plus the money that 7.7 million they're getting off council, they're getting millions, apparently, off the central government. Where is it all going?
I think the detail of how island roads operate is down to island roads. In terms of the council, if the independent certifier is signing off that the highways network has been approved by the green level, and it's signed off the independent certifier, that in line with the PFI agreement, unitary charge would be increased. How are the roads actually achieve that? Because it's an operational decision for other roads. As I understand it, it's a terrible preference decision.
I'm not an expert on the island roads contract by any means at all. I think you need to direct your questions to the director of Lake Force Conroe, who will be able to provide a response to you if you send out that.
I've even been round my ward with someone from the contracts team and pointed out all these faults in the road, and he's agreed with me. Sent it up to Ireland Roads and they come back and said it's made wrong with it. So I don't see who's ordered it. And the people who are supposed to be doing this monitoring aren't being listened to. And really, anybody here who lives on the island, are you seriously going to tell me within the next less than 18 months, every road and pavement is going to be up to a decent standard?
I think we're getting away from strict audit.
I'm sorry.
I understand the bee in your bonnet, and I have.
I'm probably the only one who's seen.
No, I mean, I tend to agree with you. Actually, it's the same in my ward. I try to get them to mend the roads. As Jen has.
That's how they can even get a bottle filled.
Yeah, but I'll say that I think this isn't really the forum for that particular discussion, if you don't mind.
No, that's all right.
Are there any other questions on this paper? If not, can we. This is paper C we're talking about, which is the audit plan for the council itself. Can we agree to note that, please? Chris is proposing, Paul is seconded. Can we vote to note that one, please? Everybody in favour? Reggie, you noting? Thank you. All in favour. Thank you very much.